Welcome to Bewildering Stories, issue 190. I'm your host and reader, Jerry Wright. Tonight's story is Hero Cop Saves Cat by Steve Douglas. Yeah, Sarge, it was one of those days. I was working the emphasis patrol for those daylight burglaries over in the Edgewood Manor area. Yeah, the ritzy zone. $500,000 townhouses, a Mercedes SUV to go to the grocery store, etc. No wonder the higher-ups want those guys caught so badly. Bad for the image, 5 break-ins, and no suspects so far. People might think that the mayor and the chief don't feel their pain. Anyway, I was parallel parked down at the corner of Fern and Windsor Circle, and this guy came out the front door of 71 Windsor, went around the side of the house and into the side door of the garage. I started the motor of my patrol car just in case, although he didn't have anything more than an airline carry-on bag. I saw the garage door come up and the burgundy Rolls-Royce convertible back out of the garage. Yeah, a Rolls, no kidding. He backed down the driveway about 30 foot, stopped, and the driver got out. Caucasian male, 35-ish, about 6 foot or so. Dark hair, conservative hairstyle, light gray suit. Looked like an executive type. He went to the corner of the house, and he picked up a stepladder and leaned it against the front of the house under an open window. I know, you don't lean a stepladder against a wall. Where was I? Oh, right. Well, he had the ladder stuck in the soft dirt of the flower bed, and I could see trouble coming already, so I rolled the patrol car over in front of the house and started to get out as he climbed the ladder. Then the idiot grabbed the sash and yanked the window down, or at least tried to, because as soon as he tried to put pressure on the window... Yeah, you can see it coming, too. Well, with all that pressure he's trying to put on the window, the ladder leaned out from the wall just enough to put the weight on the legs. Sure enough, the one closest to the driveway sank in the soft dirt. Well, it was magnificent. Lovely aim. He went over sideways and made a perfect one-point landing in the front seat of the Rolls. Oh, hi, Harv. You got here just as it starts getting interesting. Well, anyway, when the guy landed in the front seat, he knocked the gear shift into drive. He must have hit the gas pedal pretty hard, too, because the Rolls chirped its tires and whoosh, jackrabbited back up the driveway into the garage and smacked through the back wall. Not to mention which, the ladder hanging off the side of the car clipped the gas meter on the side of the house on the way by. About this time, I grab my radio and I call for fire, an aid car, electric company, the gas company emergency response teams. It's a good thing I did, too, because when he went through the back wall, he must have taken out the breaker box. There are all kinds of sparks and arcs going off in there. And that's about when the garage collapsed. And at the same time, the runaway Rolls hit a big old tree at the back edge of the yard. Not quite hard enough to break it off, but hard enough to knock it loose in the ground. It was awesome watching that old tree topple over. One of the big roots sticking out under the car flipped the car over just like flipping a flapjack. Only did a complete 360 and landed on its wheels again. I don't know how he avoided being ejected. The motor was still running and it was still in gear, so it did what cars normally do in that condition and took off again out toward the street, with the guy's legs still waving in the air. I thought it was about all over by now, but Rolls are tough babies. It still had enough left to hit the power pole in the corner hard enough to break it off and bring it down and across Windsor to take out the fire hydrant there. It must have figured that was a good day's work, because that's when the motor finally stalled and that part of the party was over. Well, I figured it was now safe to go over and see if the guy in the car was still alive after his joyride, but about this time there was this big woof, and the gas from the gas meter lit off. I ran for the house just as a woman came running out the front door. That's also when the TV news crew pulled up, piled out of their van, and started taping. She took one look at the home improvement project in progress and screamed. Then as I got to her, she grabbed me and she cried, "Save the cat, please, officer! Save the poor stray cat! I was feeding it in the kitchen!" I shook her off, and cursing under my breath so that she couldn't hear me, I tore into the house, and I found the cat, who wasn't stupid. He was en route to the door without any help at all. It didn't look like much that it needed any saving, but I grabbed it anyway, and with the cat in my arms, I zinged out the front door. I grabbed the lady and took them both down and put them in the back of my unit. Went back on the radio, called for a couple of traffic units to block Windsor Drive, one at Dahlia Lane and the other at Whiffle Crescent. I also called for the city water. Electric company reported that the division substation had blown up when the wires hit the water, and they asked for fire units to expedite their response to what was rapidly becoming a fully involved house fire. While I was talking, I was trotting over to the rolls, where the erstwhile driver had at last gotten right to end up, at least, even if he looked like he didn't have a clue or a dime to buy one with. He was gazing around with a silly look on his face, and I grabbed the door and opened it and said, "Are you okay? Can you move?" No, it wasn't a silly question. I could smell raw gasoline, and one fire at a time is plenty. I told him if he's able to move, he'd better take his hiney out of that wreck and relocate it to a place that wasn't working to go up in a fireball any second. So he got out of the car, still dragging that silly carry-on with him, and staggered across the street toward my patrol unit and, I assumed, his wife. About this time, the first fire units evolved, and the station lieutenant took one look and asked for a full battalion response. He told me to go into the house next door and get the people out, as the fire was going ballistic by now. The gas hadn't been shut off yet, and the wrecked garage was now in the process of enthusiastically and spectacularly burning up, as well as the house. Second fire unit now arrived, and was proceeding to give the old rolls a decent burial in fire-suppressant foam. The first unit had finally located a hydrant that worked, and was preparing to play with their fire hoses, and an aid car was coming down Fern, with the driver totally awed by the carnage. I went over on 69 Windsor, but the lady there, who lived there, was already outside. She was looking at the elm tree that had come crashing down onto her driveway, and onto A, the front corner of her porch, and B, the Mercedes sedan in the drive. She was visibly upset, which is cop speak for pissed as hell. I asked if there was anyone else at home, but when she said no, I politely requested that she move across the street, as her safety was at risk this close to the fire. She was quite pleasant about it, and thanked me for my concern on behalf of her safety, and sloshed across the street, which was rapidly approaching 6 inches deep in water from the broken hydrant. At this point, I figured the excitement was about over, which just goes to show that I don't know nothing. It was just getting to the best part. The paramedics from the aid car were busy checking out the fellow from the rolls, and his wife left my patrol car and was hovering in the back of the meat wagon, and everything looked under control. Yeah, right. A cab came slowly down Fern and pulled right up where it had been parked just 15 minutes ago, and watching a guy come out his front door. The fare got out, and boy howdy, what a looker she was. About 22, long blonde hair down to there, long legs clear up to there, and dressed to show 'em both. The accessories were pretty tasty, too. She paid off the cabbie and walked over to where I was and looked at the fire and the water and the down power pole and all the pretty flashing lights. Then she saw the crunched rolls slowly emerging from the piles of suppressant foam, and her pace quickened. She asked breathlessly where the driver of the rolls was. So I politely indicated the aid car and told her they were checking him for injuries right now. She gave me a big smile and said thank you and strode purposefully in that direction. Mentally distracted by the scenery, I was almost missed the blue-haired lady in the caddy sedan, who thought we'd closed the street just to inconvenience her. I gave her directions to several alternative destinations and the routes to follow, and she left in a huff, just in time for me to hear raised female voices in the vicinity of the aid car. Looking that way, it appeared that a confrontation was taking place, so I proceeded toward the aid car. I arrived in the midst of a barrage of, "What do you mean, his wife? And lunch with you?" The language went rapidly downhill from there, and I was thinking I was going to have a ringside seat at a catfight when they both screamed simultaneously, "You bastard!" and went to work on the gent that the paramedics had finished with. It took two paramedics, the aid car driver, three firefighters, and myself to get them both off of him. I sent the young blonde, Miss Brandy Boone, to stand by a patrol car, and the wife, Miss Amber Bright, to wait out of the aid car. The crash victim was being worked on by paramedics since the two women had undone a great deal of their previous work. Well, I called for a unit with the female officer to assist the ladies. The driver of the aid car gave me a significant look, so I went over to talk to him. He pointed out to me the carry-on that the guy had been hauling around, lying there on the ground by the back bumper of the aid car. It had been torn open somewhere during the many activities of the day, and a white powder was dribbling out. I thought I recognized it, and so did he, so I told him to have the paramedics stall a bit on the repair work and then got out of earshot and called for a narcotics unit. Sergeant Peters and his partner got there in about 5 minutes, and as soon as they saw the carry-on lying there in the street in the back of the aid car, they both smiled like kids in a candy store. After a quick field chem test, they smiled even more. When the paramedics finished, Peters placed one Wiley Bright, attorney at law, under arrest for possession with intent to distribute 5 kilos of pure cocaine. While Peters and Dawson were working with Mr. Bright, I questioned the two women, one at a time. Mrs. Bright was a bit distraught, but bearing up well. Her story was that her husband had said he was going to lunch with a client and then back to the office in another client meeting for dinner. She claimed that she'd never seen Miss Boone before. She also stated that she was starting divorce proceedings as soon as she could find a telephone that worked. I cautioned her about her display of affection for her husband, stating that someone not familiar with the circumstances might have mistaken it for a case of domestic violence and arrested her. It was Miss Boone's turn next, and it was about what I'd figured. They'd met in a singles bar and had been seeing each other for about 3 weeks. She had no idea he was a lawyer and, furthermore, had plainly stated that he was not married and that she hoped that he would soon be stinking up the proper corner of hell that was obviously reserved for him by name. I cautioned her about her peculiar behavior on finding her boyfriend injured, and the uninformed might think that it was actually an assault in progress. I then released the battling bimbos to Officer Julie Bates to see what could be done to get them out of there before someone really got hurt. That just about wrapped it up. The firefighters had the fire out by now. The wrecker showed up to tow the rolls. The water department had shot off the broken hydrant. The gas company had the gas shut off, and we had a felony narcotics arrest. I went over to the neighbor lady's, get the neighbor lady's name and address so I could send her a copy of the report so she'd be able to file insurance claims on her car and her house. She gave me her name, address, phone number, and invited me over to dinner as she was a recent widow, new in town, and didn't know anybody here yet. A real lady, about 30, red hair, blue eyes, about 5'3". Well, we don't need to go into that, it isn't relevant. She also took custody of the cat, which had spent the whole time in the back of my patrol car, and hadn't even left any souvenirs. The cat seemed to like me, so I guess I'll just have to go visit it. Often. The only fly in the ointment from my point of view was that damn TV crew. They set up just in time to catch me running out of the burning house with that cat in my arms and seemed to think I'd done something really special. Those idiots ran the lead story at the 6 o'clock news entitled, "Hero Cop Saves Cat." I wonder if I can sue.